Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Tonight, we discuss a new approach to changing the trajectory of youths in San Francisco's Mission District. Started by two San Francisco policemen, John Caffey and David Sands, this new effort is making police work look more like social work. And it's not without its challenges. Officers Caffey and Sands are trying to help people whose relationship with the police is uneasy at best. But tired of cycling mission teens in and out of jails, Caffey and Sands reached out to Supervisor David Campos, inspired business owners and former gang members for help. The collaboration seems to be working. And on June 7th, the officers were awarded the 2013 San Francisco Peacemaker Award by public mediation program Community Boards. So tonight, we'll learn what is making this intervention such a success, and what are some obstacles that this program may face. Can there be programs like this in other parts of the Bay Area? And what's going to allow this program to grow and remain sustainable? So as we start this program, we're going to start with two guests who are joining us by phone for the first part of the hour. First is Supervisor David Campos. He oversees District 9 here in San Francisco, which includes the Mission District and Bernal Heights. He's a graduate of Stanford and Harvard Law School. And Supervisor Campos has been the Deputy City Attorney of San Francisco and the General Counsel to the San Francisco Unified School District. He's also been a member of the San Francisco Police Commission. Welcome, Supervisor Campos.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're also joined by phone by Christopher Kondo. Mr. Kondo runs ABS Seafood, a distributor of fresh seafood to the Bay Area. He currently employs a teen whom he met through officers Caffey and Sands. Welcome, Chris.
Hello. Hello.
And then joining us a little bit later in the hour, we'll have Officer John Caffey, who, with Officer David Sands, started Family and Education Over Everything, and he's been a San Francisco police officer for the last 11 years. And then we'll be joined as well by Mike Bowen and Oscar Pena. These are two individuals who are working with the officers, and we'll hear more about them in just a moment as well. And we'll invite you, our listeners, to join in our conversation in about 20 minutes or so. You can dial 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment at the KLW website or on our Facebook page. So, Supervisor Campos, I wanted to start with you. Tell us how you got involved.
Well, you know, we have been working on violence prevention efforts for quite some time, and one day, about a year and a half ago, I was basically in the neighborhood. I think I was about to go get a burrito on 24th Street, and that's when John Caffey came up to me and said, you know, I knew him, that he was a police officer, and said, I'm tired of the cycle where you know, we go after a youth, we pick them up, we book them, they go to jail or prison, and then they come out, and we go through the same cycle. Is there a way that we can break that cycle? And that's when we started talking about jobs. And I basically said, you know, I am very interested in working with the police. I used to be on the police commission, so I know that there are many officers that are interested in breaking this cycle. But I was really amazed that this officer, whose job was probably to go after some of these youth, was coming to me and saying, we need to do something different. And so I basically said, I'm on board, and let's figure out a way of making it happen. And we had a number of meetings following that, and we started talking to various city agencies and businesses to see how we could make it happen. But that's how it came about.
So when we've talked on this program or in other places about what it would take to kind of really change the trajectory of a lot of disadvantaged urban youth, opportunity, education, jobs becomes, rises to the top of the list. Tell us, what is different or new about your approach? Is it the people who got together? Is it actually just trying to make this happen for a change? Or is there something else that was unique about this opportunity?
Well, I think a number of things. I think there is no panacea. And one of the things that's very clear about this population is that for every young person that we have managed to be a part of this program, it has taken, you know, many, many approaches by officers Caffey and Sands. And, you know, you have to catch them at the right time. And even then, you know, you have to go back to maybe the same person a number of times before they finally decide. You have to make sure that it's not just that the opportunity is there, but that the young person is willing to take advantage of that opportunity. which is why, you know, once we approach them, they have to make, you know, they have to sign a contract where they make a commitment that they are going to, you know, play by the rules, they're going to go to work, and they're going to be conscientious people, that they're going to be respectful, responsible. We also try to involve the family, because if there's support for that person at home, it makes a big difference. And then we connect them, besides just finding them a job, we connect them with a support system so that they understand that they're not alone. It's not just a matter of finding them a job. We actually need to make sure that we support them so that they're successful. And to be honest, it was harder when we were starting out because there were no success stories. Now that we have seen some of the successes, then I think that it's a stronger case, because now more young people know about it, and so they realize that, you know what, this is real, because we wanted to make sure that we were also delivering on the promises that we were making so that we did not disappoint them.
Mm. So what kind of reaction did you get from people you work with in your office or other parts of City Hall when you decided to join forces with these two innovative police officers?
Well, I think that it's there's this in some respects, people are surprised that as a progressive supervisor that I'm working with the police. The reality is that, you know, I've been on the police commission before. I work very closely with the police department all the time.
And why would these be surprised?
Because I think that there's this idea that somehow if you're a progressive, liberal, elected official, that somehow law enforcement is not a priority. The reality is that, you know, I have been working on these issues for many, many years, since before I was the police commission. And I think I have a very good sense of how police officers work. And I know that the officers themselves know that just having law enforcement and having a police presence is not the solution, that you have to do more than that. And to be honest, it's a very difficult population. These are not kids that are angels. These are kids that got in trouble, and many of them were responsible for a lot of problems in these neighborhoods. And the fact that we were willing to take that chance was a big thing for them. And I didn't know that it was going to work necessarily, but the way that I see it is that you have to try different things and you have to think outside the box. And the fact that these officers were willing to, who are putting their lives on the line every day, were willing to do this, for me, it was a no-brainer that I, as an elected official, was going to do everything I could to help them.
And my understanding is one of the features of this program is that those teens that choose to take officers Cathy and Sands up on the offer of a job get to meet with you. Tell us about that. What's that like for you? What does it feel like to have a conversation? And what have you learned from the conversations you've had with the teens you've met with?
Well, the first thing that we wanted to make sure was that we wanted to convey the message that these, you know, many of these kids have had adults in their lives that have failed them. So we wanted to have a face-to-face so that they could see that we were serious about this commitment. And second, you know, that we also got an actual commitment from them, that they understood that if they were going to go down this path, that they have to be serious about it, and that there would be an expectation that they were going to show up to work, they're going to, you know, deliver and be responsible. And to be honest, for many of them, it was the very first time that they ever, you know, set foot in City Hall. They had never met with an elected official. They had never had a government, you know, official talk to them and say, you know, I believe in you and I'm entrusting you with this possibility, this opportunity. And I learned a lot from them, because one of the things that I learned was that for many of them, they were just, you know, waiting for a chance, for someone to say, you know what, I know that you have made mistakes in your life, but we believe that you have what it takes to change your life. And that someone could say that, it probably made it so that they themselves could start believing in themselves. And it was very powerful. And it's not only for them, it's a life-changing thing for their families as well. You know, the first kid that we helped, we met with the dad, and the dad had, you know, he was living his life thinking that at some point his son was going to be found dead on the streets. And it was such a big weight had been lifted off his shoulders that the police were going to meet with him at his house, not to say your son is in trouble, but we want to help him. You know, and the fact that I was involved made it easier for them to open that door and trust the police. So it's been a very eye-opening experience on many different levels.
And just a couple more questions before I move on to Chris Kondo. So tell us, given your interest in this area and your work in work collaborating with law enforcement that stretches back before your current political life, what lessons have you been able to draw about this particular intervention or the way it's unfolding currently about, as I mentioned earlier, bending that curve, bending the trajectory of what would otherwise happen to youth who might not otherwise have this opportunity?
Well, I think that one of the lessons is you have to take, be willing to take that extra step to actually communicate with these young people, because they've never had an adult, certainly no one in a position of power, communicate with them. The second thing is to also, you know, be persistent and to not give up, because for every kid that we have been able to help, we've had many where we have not been successful. And one of the things that we are very, you know, keen on is making sure that we get them at the right time. So we, you know, we have to be on call when it happens, you know, and it doesn't happen in the most opportune or the most convenient time. And you can't let up, you know, you have to be persistent, you have to be resilient. And there are times when you succeed, there are times when you fail, but you have to, you know, you have to continue and be relentless in your efforts. And eventually, you know, that maybe after the tenth try, eventually the kid will get it, you know. And so I remain hopeful. And of course, you know, the work at the end of the day comes out of, you know, Officers Cafe and SANS, because they're the ones who are on the street. You know, they're putting themselves on the line, and they're the ones who are approaching the youth.
And finally, I'd ask, what does this experience teach you about this collaboration between a political official such as yourself and city employees who may be coming forward and approaching you with a whole host of ideas on how to do things better? What have you learned from that?
I think that you always have to be open for what other ideas that people have. The reality is that some of the most meaningful and best things that we have worked on are things that other people came to us with the idea of doing it. And one thing that I would say about these police officers is that I think that they're special, but they're also like many other police officers who I think are in this line of work because they care about young people. And you have to have an open mind and be willing to listen to different sides. I know that I have learned a lot from the police officers. The youth have learned a lot from the police officers. The police officers have also learned a lot from the youth. I think that we all have something to learn, something in common. And it's about taking the time and taking the initiative and not being afraid of doing something just because people haven't tried it before.
Great. So Supervisor Campos, I'm going to thank you for joining us to set up the hour for us here. Thanks so much for your time. And we're going to say goodbye to you now and turn next to Chris.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. We're going to turn next to Chris Kondo. And he is one of the individuals who has heeded the call by the officers we mentioned earlier to give a job opportunity to the teens that we've been discussing so far this hour. So, Chris, you run ABS Seafood, a distributor of fresh seafood to the Bay Area, and you employ one of the teens that you met through Officers Cafe and SANS. Tell us how you got involved.
The way I got involved was I take BART to work, and I walk down the Embarcadero every day, and I look at the newsstands, and every day it was just, it's just like real negative. And then there was a Bay Guardian article on the two officers, so I grabbed it and I read it. I don't run it by myself. I have two partners. And so I read the article, and I brought it to, and I was impressed. I was totally impressed. I was totally pumped, psyched. I want to hear more stuff like that in our city. I'm born and raised there too, so I brought it to work. I showed it to my partners, and we agreed. So I gave there was no number or contact, so I just called the Mission Police Station, and the police officer who answered was real stern, like, you know, like, what do you want? Why do you want to talk to him? And then when I told him I'm here for the jobs, they passed me on to his voicemail, and I just left my name and my number, and they got right back to me.
So tell us what your experience has been so far.
with the individual or the whole process?
Either. What? Yeah.
It was real good. I was very impressed. We met with the officers and Supervisor Campos, and they broke down how much work is going in before we would actually see a candidate. So we went down and we met with them, and we needed like a person. So we had an opening, so we told them, hey, we need an opening. And within about a month, we had the individual came down. He did the application. We accepted him. Everything looked good. And it's an interesting story. He's been working for us for some months now. In the very beginning, there was you know, just like any other employee, we dealt with some things. And what's cool is like he's become one of our best guys in that department. And the interesting thing was the other day, I won't really talk to him, but I had a chat with him, and he was actually thankful, and he actually said that the program has helped him stay off the streets a little bit more. And he goes, like, last year at this time, all he could think about were the streets and, you know, doing the things that he used to do on the streets. So I didn't tell him, but I'll tell him tomorrow. But we didn't really do anything from the officers and Campos did. And I told him all we did was give you the opportunity for a job, and basically he did everything else. And we actually needed another opening, and we told them, but we weren't able to fulfill that position. So that told me too that the screening process is very, it's not easy. They're just not putting people through the program. They said, we have someone, but it's not going to work at, you know, so the screening is thorough, which I was really impressed by too.
So tell us about what this employee does for work with you.
He's in a traffic department. Basically, he expedites deliveries. He's responsible for, a truckload of items, and we have at least 300 items. So he's had to learn each individual item, check them off before he leaves, deliver maybe 20 to 30 restaurants, and he has to make sure each item gets to the correct restaurant, and then check in if there's issues, and do good customer service, and he does his route, and he comes back. And actually, I looked at his timesheet, and you know, he works some full weeks. It's not an easy job. Like it's over 8 hours sometimes, and he pulls his weight, and I'm really happy for that.
You mentioned some obstacles that you and he had to overcome. In general terms, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's pretty. I hate to say typical, but you know, we get new employees, and they'll be on time for the first week, and then they'll start coming 5 minutes, 10 minutes late. And when I heard about it, I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything. And the managers, they just sat them down. They talked to them just like they would any other employee. And he's now on time, and he tightened it up himself. So the thing that I think is cool is, like, we treated him no differently, and we did nothing. You know, we didn't really do anything. We just gave him a job application. He filled it out correctly. He got the job, and he's doing a good job all on his own.
And any reservations that you had before you became an employer through this program?
No, not me, because I grew up in San Francisco. A lot of guys, I'd say 90% of the people at our company have grown up in San Francisco, some from better backgrounds than others. And what we've learned over the years, I've been doing it for 20 years at ABS with my partners, is we believe everyone deserves a chance. It doesn't matter if the kid was like hardcore or not or whatever. We believe in giving everyone a chance, and it's been successful for us. And so that's when I believe, when I read that really touched us. Like someone else, you know, other people are doing that too. So we had no reservations. Actually, we have an office, accounting, and we needed an accounting person. So the woman in charge of accounting said, hey, can you get someone from the program? We tried, but there was no one available.
Right. And a couple more questions for you. What's your biggest surprise, or what was the most unexpected experience that you've had or result that you've had out of this?
My biggest surprise is how involved the supervisor and the police officers are. When I read it, to be honest, I thought I'd give it a chance. I didn't know how deep it went and how involved so many people are. But now I understand, because they do a lot before we actually get the candidate, and there's a lot of work on that back end, that they do the screening and the training and all that. That's what I was most impressed with. I thought maybe it was a revolving door, like, okay, put him in the job program. He comes here, he falls off. And the officers email me, and they check in, and they ask me, how's he doing? Wow. And that impressed me, too, because, you know, I was just not expecting all of that.
And then finally, it sounds like you're very satisfied with your participation and, in fact, want more involvement in this program. What advice or how would you pitch or sell this to other business owners who might be listening right now, who might be interested in reaching out to help a teen in the mission who would otherwise maybe go down a different path, but because of opportunities that you and other business owners can offer, might be able to change that?
I think I believe everyone in life deserves a chance, and a lot of people don't know how to get that chance. So that's where the officers come in. They help you, and all you do is give them a chance. For me, and I didn't stigmatize anyone. I didn't stigmatize them. I didn't think any. And I was just like, I just believe we should treat them all like, unfortunately, they grew up in an environment that's not as positive as some other environment. Doesn't mean that, in my opinion, they don't deserve a chance or they should be pushed to the side. Everyone deserves an equal chance opportunity than everyone else was. And I from experience, 20 years, we've gone through hundreds of people, and a lot of them will really surprise you. You know, you never know what you're going to get. And I mean, I'm for it. I'm all for it. I don't see how it can go wrong.
And it sounds like you're part of a larger team, so there's a lot of support that you get.
Yeah, definitely. Not everyone knew about the program. Just people who needed to know, because we didn't want anyone to be treated differently. But it worked out perfectly, and I'm super super happy with what's gone on. And I hope they do this more. And I hope more people can offer jobs. You know.
That's great. Thank you so much, Chris Kondo of ABS Seafood here in San Francisco. Thanks for joining us this evening. We're going to say goodbye to you now.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
And just in case you're just joining us, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing new opportunities for mission youths with our guests. We just heard from Supervisor Campos, who oversees the Mission District in Bernal Heights here in San Francisco, and just a moment ago, Chris Kondo, owner of ABS Seafoods, a Bay Area seafood distributor and employer of mission youth, who are approached by two officers from the San Francisco Police Department who might otherwise be on a trajectory that would lead them perhaps to detention or other fates. These two people, Supervisor Campos and Chris Kondo, became part of a solution to offer jobs to these teens as a way out. And we're going to hear from our other guests in just a moment, but I also want to open our phone lines to our listeners. If you'd like to join our conversation, 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're a parent and you're concerned about your teen and want to ask questions about how your teen could get involved in a program such as this, 415-841-4134. If you're a business owner and you're interested in participating in the program, 415-841-4134. Or if in general you have concern about the welfare of the youth of this city, 415-841-4134. Feedback at cityvisionsradio.org. Post comment at klw.org or on our Facebook page. So now for the remaining part of the hour, I'm going to turn to our in-studio guests, and I'll go ahead and introduce them. So first, we have Oscar Pena, and he works with Officer John Cathy and David Sands to engage the youth in this program. And we're also joined by Mike Bowen. He is a counterpart to Oscar in working with these youth. And finally, we're joined by Officer John Cathy, who started Family and Education Over Everything and has been one of the two police officers behind the effort that you've been hearing about so far this hour. So welcome to all three of you.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Elvis.
Thanks for having me here.
Great. So I wanted to start with you, Oscar. tell us a little bit about how you, as I've asked all the guests so far, how did you get involved in this?
Well, I started attending City College San Francisco, pursuing a degree in criminal justice. And through City College San Francisco, there's a program called Equal Opportunity Program Services, which is known as EOPS. Through EOPS, there's another branch off to there, another program called Second Chance. Second Chance is known to help people who have been incarcerated, and they give them book vouchers, food cards, and they also give them a personal counselor. And through that counselor, he'll provide you an ed plan. So I started to build this nice relationship with Guillermo, who's one of the counselors there. And it was something different about him. He started to get to know me as opposed to just referring classes to me. And we start conversating and everything. And through our conversation, he told me about a project that he was doing with police officer John Kathy and David Sands, and told me about the whole concept about helping youth before they get into the gangs, how we can reach out to the families, to the communities. And I said, great, that's something that I'm already doing, because at the time I was a case manager, so I was working with youth already that are on probation. So I was doing that for some 4 years. And so I felt like that was my call, my need to help out these youth to get them off the system and get them off the streets. But how can we do it? Because it's going to take an effort of everybody coming together. So long story short, we met with John Cathy and David Sands at the admission station. I brought my little son with me. And from there, we just started collaborating and started planning this thing, and it launched off, and we went to James Lake Middle School. We talked to a few family members. So I'm really happy and glad to be part of this, because it's important to show the community in our city that we all have to collaborate and work in together. And I think sometimes there's barriers and stigma of working with law officers or politicians, but that needs to be broken, because as our new generation's coming in and our youth, they're at risk, we need to continue to collaborate. And we need to show examples of how important it is to collaborate with such as law officers, regardless of the background of anybody. If they're in gangs or anything, they want help, but sometimes they don't know how to reach out to help, you know, and they might be looked at differently as opposed to their friends or community. But yet we're just trying to help out people to save them from going to, you know, the route of being incarcerated or dead or anything like that.
And so tell us about what your role is specifically in this outreach.
My role specifically is relating to the families and to the youth, sharing them my experience of me being a former gang member who was involved pretty heavy, and how I was able to change my life through education. Through education we can avoid incarceration. And so that's something that I'm really pushed forward to support youth out there. So I go and just relate my story to them, but also give them some figures, some tips and suggestions of what to look out for the family members first. You know, these are the signs that you should look out if your son or daughter's potential a recruit for a gang. And then I'll speak to the youth. And to the youth, I'll tell them, you know, these are the things that you'll go through if you're going through a gang.
So what might be some of those tips that you're highlighting?
Well, one, for the family, I like to start off is, one, I know that many family members have, like, either double jobs or triple jobs. And so my question is, how much time are we spending with our kids at the table? How much time are we spending with our own family in our houses? You know, and it's quick. People are quick to point fingers at gang members or the neighborhoods. But yet, I say, you know, you point one finger at the city, at the neighborhoods, but then you got three more pointed back at you. And so what are you doing as opposed to help your family out? You know, are you sitting down at least once a week at the dinner table with your kids and checking in with them? How did your day go? What did you learn? Or who did you meet? This is very important, and I think that's being forgotten. And so that's where I start off at. And then with the kids, I'll tell them, hey, you know, who are your friends? And what do you, what is your definition of a friend or associate? And then break that down and tell them, okay, well, these are your actual friends. You know, people who will help you and support you in your education, who will help you to become a better person, to be able to be a leader. And so I tell them, you know, these are the consequences that will happen if you go through living that type of lifestyle. You know, whether you might be dead, you might be paralyzed, or you might be in prison. And we're starting to see that. And so I volunteer in the prisons also. I go into Solano State Prison, and I go into San Quentin Prison currently. And through there, I like to listen to those guys who are incarcerated so I can relate those stories and information back to the youth and to the community. So that's what I like doing. It's just connecting the words and the stories that are not being heard.
So what kind of myths or what kind of misperceptions are you trying to clear up that makes gang life other would have made gang life otherwise attractive for the youth you're trying to reach out to and to the families who you're trying to raise awareness with?
So I would like to say that, you know, one is breaking the stigma, the stereotype of, you know, all gang members or just walking down the street. There goes your typical Latino kid or your typical African-American kid. You know, he's going to be incarcerated. You know, he's already flunking in school. You know, he's already getting in trouble. So losing hope in our youth. And so then for me, I'm that statistic that people think that I'll be incarcerated. But yet I was able to turn things around by how, by who? By people that were actually out there, like such as Officers Kathy and Sands, that are out there concerned about our youth. You know, I mean, we don't want to continue to imprison people. We want to help them. We want to give them some alternative of thinking of how they can, you know, change their lives for the better. And so for me, that's when I wanted to go into school. I dropped out of high school for 5 years due to going into the streets. And from that, going into school, it changed my whole perspective of life. And I say, one who's not educated, they're in a state of ignorance. And that's true. I was in a state of ignorance. But once I started becoming educated, I began to see the potential and talent that I had within myself and be able to collaborate and connect with people and say, you know what, I want to help out. I know I can do much more. And understanding my purpose of life and understanding what is my calling. You know, of course, it's getting a degree, but then there's something much more greater than that. And I want to reach out to these youth because I'm starting to see so much in San Francisco, in our own city. I can't start national. I have to start local to understand that our youth are at danger. They're either being shot down. They're in prison. They're put in juvenile halls. I see that all the time when I was working up at juvenile hall.
And so, so what one message would you try to do you try to give to teens to say, you know, a gang may seem appealing for these reasons, but this is not going to lead you down the right path. What, tell us about that dynamic. How do you break that dynamic that at-risk teen may be gravitating towards a gang because it's a group of people perhaps that are promising certain things or showing a certain connection or affiliation or even affection for a child who might otherwise not know where else to get that kind of support?
Well, I mean, there are many reasons why a youth would join a gang, first of all. For me, and I like to relate it to it, is that, you know, I didn't have my father as much there for me. My mother was the one who raised me. She was not only my mother, but my companion, my friend. And I spent a lot of time with her. And she can only do so much. And then she came from a third world country, which is in Nicaragua. It was very poor. So coming out here, you know, she wanted something better. And she dedicated a lot of time, the time that she could, but she was also working, cleaning houses. From that, then I became curious of what was out there in the streets. And then I began to meet friends, so-called friends, that were already involved in gangs, that were smoking weed or drinking or going to parties, hanging out with girls, such and such. We know the whole, you know, get down. So my mind, curiosity, led to that. I said, okay, I want to check this out. And began to feel more accepted. And that's the thing. The youth want to feel accepted to something. Not as opposed to, oh, you're not worthy enough or you're not good enough, you know, to be a part of this whatever organization or program. And so then that curiosity led to the wrong path and going and getting involved with gangs, you know. And then I began, as I get older, understanding, what am I doing this for? I'm hurting my own people over a color, first of all, over a territory that I don't own. I mean, it's owned by the city, you know. And so then I began to say, okay, you know what? How do I break this this barrier of me living this lifestyle? Because a lot of my friends that I grew up in the gangs, they were already going to prison for life. They were already, I went to, like, 1 year, I went to 6 funerals due to gang rival deaths. And so then I said, you know, this is definitely a sign from a higher creator. I said, I got to get out of this lifestyle. And how do I do it? Because at the time I was like 24, 25. And normally our youth, they're not even reaching to the age of 21. And that's something very important that we're seeing, is that a lot of youth are being killed, gunshot by, you know, a gun or a stab wound. So I wanted to break that barrier and got out of that. But through the gang, I can say that I learned structure. I did learn structure, how to be more disciplined, how to understand that, you know, that not all the gang members were very negative influence on me, but more that some were telling me, like, the older guys are like, hey, if you're going to be out here, you need to go to school. And so you do have some good guys out there, but they're caught up in the wrong lifestyle, and they don't know how to let go of that lifestyle because it's like a routine. Mm-hmm. But those are the guys that do want to help out the youth, but just they don't know how. Mm. Yeah.
So thank you so much, Oscar Pena. And I want to reintroduce the program. This is City Visions on 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. And tonight we're discussing giving new opportunities to mission youth and other at-risk youths with our guests, earlier Supervisor David Campos and Chris Kondo of ABS Seafoods. And just there we were listening to Oscar Pena, who's working to help give job opportunities to at-risk youth in the Mission District. And I'm going to turn next now to one of the two officers who you've heard mentioned many times, John Cathay. Welcome to the program. And I know it's you know, it's been a while since we introduced the program to bring you in at this point. Thanks for your patience. But I wanted to really give our listeners a sense of kind of the scope of this before we turn to you. 50% of the power behind this intervention. And I wanted to start somewhere, take a point of Oscar Pena's and David Campos's. Both talked about how family structure, the lack thereof, and is one of the risk factors for the youth. And what struck me by those comments is one of your interventions is to really reconnect the youth with their families. How do you approach that puzzle, right? How do you help to repair some disruptions, some of which come from economic hardship that require that family members have to work several jobs, which means they're absent from the home, so unintentionally absent, so to speak. How do you work in a situation like this where the family structure is maybe at the root of the problem without turning someone against their family? How do you make that connection come back together?
Well, first, I'd just like to say, as you could see, we don't do this by ourselves. My partner, Officer Sands, and I can only get this done without the support of our superiors and all these people helping us. So we might be where the rubber meets the road, but nothing gets done without help from everybody. And that's why we're all here today. But what we realize when we're out there is it's the same thing's been happening since I was a kid. You see the kids out on the street, but you see the families at home as you walk by the house, and you can see mom and dad in there and like Oscar said, sitting at the dinner table, and then they have those families. But not all families have that bond. And so we do two things specifically. One, we're gang officers in Mission, and there's a lot of great officers out there in the gang task force making great arrests. And this program's not for everybody, and there's guys getting locked up and well-deserved. But not everybody, you know, needs to be locked up. If they're not doing anything wrong, you have a time to talk to them and just ask them why they're out there. So we do two things. One, with family and education over everything with Mike and what Oscar is involved in is we don't call it intervention, we don't call it prevention, we call it retention. We take families, we sit them down, and we say you're about to embark on this journey as your kids are growing up, but you know, people are going to be out there trying to influence your kids. So just keep what you have. Sit down, like Oscar says, at the dinner table. Talk to your kids. Take them out. Spend time with them. If you can't, explain to the kid why you're not there. So the kid doesn't think, well, my parents don't care about me. If you want that $300 pair of Jordans and mom's got to work two jobs to get it, sometimes mom doesn't explain to the kid. So the kid thinks, well, you know, mom and dad aren't there, so I'm going to go out on the streets. So we just try and keep that together with the family and education over everything. And what we really give them is nothing they don't already have. If they're interested in listening to us and they sit down with their families, they already have what they need. Just keep your family together. If the kid makes it through middle school, junior high, and high school, gets his diploma, odds of him becoming a gang member is almost nil. Once they get an education, like Oscar says, they're on their way. And the other part on the street is for the kids that are already involved in gangs, not every contact has to be a police contact. If we just roll up on some guys and are hanging out, we talk to them and we say, hey, with the amount of time you're spending on the street, you know how much money you could be making working? And so a lot of them are afraid, I think personally, to fill out job applications. They don't have the self-esteem and they're afraid to even step forward because they don't want to fail. Their whole lives have been failing. And so we said, tell you what, all that's a clean slate. If you want to make a change, we will give you a job. And that's where we met Supervisor David Campos. And you know, he does a lot more than he says he does. I call him and his aides late at night, text them, and they text me back. I can get him on the phone at 12:45 and put him on the phone with somebody to talk to him and say, David wants to talk to you, and he'll do it. And he never complains. I'm waiting for him to say no because I've always asked him for a lot of stuff. He keeps saying yes. So until that day comes, we're going to keep pushing it.
And I want to ask you, what's it like to approach the family members? I imagine it's a really delicate conversation to go up to a parent and say, you know, your child's at risk of joining a gang, and I'm going to try to give you an opportunity to turn this around. I imagine it's a source of shame or guilt on a family's part to kind of be approached by a police officer, or what's it like for you as a police officer, a law enforcement person, to approach a parent and say, wait a minute, this has got to change? How do you create a sense of safety when you approach those families to make them trust you that you're actually there to help them out and to turn this around?
Well, with everything we do with the family and education and over everything and with the jobs and the gangs, we never ask anybody for anything. And it's never about us. It's all about them. And the people can tell we're sincere about helping them. And for the families, basically, like one day we sat down and we started asking all the kids, what does this gang wear? What color does this gang wear? Where does this gang hang out? From what street to what street? What numbers do they associate with? And the parents were flabbergasted. Their eyes are bulging out like, how did my kid know all this? Well, that's what we try and tell them. There's people that aren't going to ask your kid or ask you for permission to talk to your kid. You need to be well aware of what's going on. You need to be involved in your kid's life, and your kid needs to be prepared to deal with it, because both Oscar and Mike can tell you they both, when they were younger, went down the wrong path in life, and it all stemmed from a bond their family did not have. And so we see that, and every kid's a different situation. And like Supervisor Compass said, well, there's a lot of contacts we make with all these kids, and over time we win some we don't. But the ones that we do win, the numbers are growing, and they develop self-esteem. And if they're at work, they have to sleep the night before, and they can't be in two places at one time. So if they're at work and sleeping, they're not out on the street. Makes the neighborhood safer, and I think everybody wins in the end.
And so tell us a little bit about some of the statistics here. So how many teens have you approached with this opportunity? How many took you up on the offer? And then how many are still in the program or succeeding in the program?
The numbers are a lot of people we've contacted. A lot of people have taken us up on it, and a lot of people have succeeded. And on the same token, there's a lot of people that have fallen off, but we don't give up on them. There's a kid that we're going to talk to that we kind of circumvented the system, and we sent him straight to Mike to work, which I was advised not to by Supervisor Compass's assistant. She likes to be very, you know, she has a path where these guys should go. And I was just so gung-ho to get this kid. I sent him to Mike, and he worked for 45 minutes, and he walked off the job. So lesson learned. You know, he didn't associate the job, the word job, with work. He just went and said, this is great. $15 an hour, I'm in. And he didn't know he's going to have to sweat. So, You know, I mean, the numbers, they go up and down. Some guys are, if they fall off, we put them right back into it, you know.
This is City Visions on 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. I'm Joseph Pache. If you want to join our conversation with our guests this evening, please call 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You could also email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment at klw.org or our Facebook page. So you mentioned Mike Bowen. Let's go to him next. So, Mike, you also work with the gentleman in the studio with you here. Tell us, how did you get involved and just sort of reflect on what you've heard so far in this hour. Take us to the next step of understanding how an intervention like this works and why this is so important.
First of all, I'd like to say thank you to Supervisor Campos and to Police Chief Greg Sir, to John and David, and for Oscar for allowing me to be part of this program. John and I met. I was on Folsom Street. And I was in a car of mine that I was able to buy. I had a Lamborghini. And I happened to be getting out of the car, and John and David pulled up in their undercover work car and got out of the car. And I knew they were police officers. And they says, well, who are you? What are you doing? So I introduced myself, and that's how we met. And then the topic came up of my past. And I was spoke to them openly about my past, which I do everywhere. And that's when they said, you know, would you like to be part of this program? This is what we're doing. I said, of course I would. Some time had passed, and I had not heard back from them. They were trying to work out all the details. So I called them and said, what's going on, guys? So we got together, and I went into the James Lick School after some planning, after going through a lot of meetings at the Mission Street Station with the captain and the chief and Supervisor Campos and some other people, Oscar and myself. And it was a huge success at James Lick. The kids took off with it. We got 180 kids in the auditorium, 90 the first set, 90 the second set. And my past here, I believe my target, there's a focus that I have. My past here, I believe, plays a very important role with what we are all trying to do here. And if I may be briefly allowed to touch on that, as a boy, being abused physically. Mom said she didn't want me. She threw me out. Dad said he didn't want me. Threw me in juvenile hall. I proceeded to go through about 11 different foster homes. Finally, that didn't work, the Salvation Army home. I spent 4 years as a juvenile in juvenile hall. Then as I became 18 years old, a lot of times, you know, the society, when we're 18, we become an adult. But that doesn't necessarily mean we can make adult decisions. I carried my childhood into my adulthood and continued to spend the next 11 and a half years in jails and prisons. Each time I was released from jail or prison, I didn't have anybody. I didn't have a job. I had no clothes. I had no money. It was July of 1997. I was actually running from the police down in the Tenderloin in San Francisco, went out a window, three stories, woke up in San Francisco General, and I couldn't walk. And that was the last night that I had a drink or a drug. That's where my life had led me. So as I laid there in the San Francisco General Hospital for weeks, couldn't walk, the court system, because of my criminal record, could have easily put me back in prison for a long time. They decided to give me a chance, and I went into recovery in a program in Redwood City. From there, I went on to a secondary program. From there, I went on to school. I graduated from the school, and I obtained my my first contractor's license, which was a painting and waterproofing contractor's license. Then I started to... Because of my past, I felt that I had a responsibility because my life had been spared and I was given another chance. I wanted to help as many people as I could. So I started to employ people that had were in recovery, were somehow trying to get off of drugs and alcohol, had been in trouble with the law. At one time, I had 18 people in recovery working for me. That was just one of my responsibilities. So with that said, I'm trying to get out a message here on different fronts. One, there's a personal thing that goes on here with kids and adults. It's difficult to just throw them out there and give them a job because we've got, like I felt, I was worthless. I had no self-esteem. I had no direction. I didn't feel worth it. So to put me into a job, I wasn't going to make it. So as an example, when John had sent me this teen last week, for the first hour, I took him around the job site. And it was a commercial job site. Nobody's there. The building is four stories. And I took him around the block for an hour and spoke with him about how are things at home, what is he doing, how is he feeling, what kind of background does he have, and told him a little bit of my story. So this way he has some kind of hope that through my background, I was able to go to school and was able to get a job and was able to do this and be where I am at now. And because of the people that helped me, that it's also possible for him to do that regardless of what people tell him, regardless of what he tells himself. People told me that I would never make it, that I was a failure, that I would just not succeed at anything. And I found that to not be true. So then I obtained my general contractor's license, and my life is where it is right now. So I have a responsibility, and it's one that I embrace as much as I can, to speak with the kids and the adults. I'm in the jails on Wednesdays. I'm in the jails on Fridays. I'm in the San Bruno jail during the days, every few weeks. I'm doing as much outreach work in the public as I can. This is what makes it possible for me to have the company that I have, so that I can be an example as to those that don't think they can do it. And to actually, I'd like to be able to set an example for other employers. There are certain risks that I take, and those risks are very important to me. I have clients to protect. I have buildings and properties to protect, and that's why I will do everything I can to interview an adult or a teen and talk to them. And I am hands-on in my company, so I am going to be supervising them directly. And that's important for me. I care. When I see somebody talking a certain way, acting a certain way, because of my experience, I can kind of tell, kind of judge where this is going. And I've got to be hands-on to be able to do that. And I'd say that I've had awesome success in doing this. And it's because when I've talked to the kids, whether it's at the jails, in the public, I can look them in the eye and I can tell them about my life and I can be completely honest about it, and they feel it. And they know it. They know that they're talking to somebody who's been there and has felt the pain that they're feeling, because every one of them are in pain. For some reason or another, they're hurting. Whether it's a lack of a mother, a father, whether it's feeling lonely, feeling like they're a failure, feeling scared, whatever it is, I can identify with it. And it's part of my responsibility to help them, to walk them through on a personal level. And then when I feel that that is safe enough with them, then I can say, okay, now where do you want to go from here? Do you want to work? Because when I grew up, one of the things I did not want to do was work. Some of these kids are lazy. They've never had jobs. Some of them have just never had the opportunity. Some of them have just been thrown away and nobody believed in them. So I will do that and I will give them a shot. And I will say, okay, this is what we're going to do, and watch them go through it. And one of the greatest gifts I've experienced is to see a kid that comes out of jail, or a kid that is almost going to go to jail, as Oscar talked about, somebody who was in a gang or could be subject to getting into a gang, to see him come onto a job site and to do something and to see his attitude change and to see him get his first paycheck, the way it lights up his eyes. And it's just to see that, to know that I was able to be a part of that. And this is not something that I do as a tax write-off, or the contributions that I do out here in the public have nothing to do with that. This is me as a responsibility to the public, as a human being, as a man, as an employer. I have that responsibility to you, to them, to the guys in jail. I first must see to it that I live this so that they see that it works.
So that was extremely compelling and poignant, and thank you for sharing, for all of you, for sharing your personal experiences and what's drawn you to this very important work. And it seems to me that what's really important here is not giving up, right, and persevering and believing in these children, no matter what perceptions we may have of them from afar. And I think the other part that's come through to me is that having the credibility is really important, right? Otherwise, no one's going to trust you to take a path. Because one of my questions that I wrote down earlier is, you know, we talked about what the risk of this, these, if people stay in the street life, what could happen to them? Oscar, you spoke about it very poignantly. The other question that came to my mind is, what is the risk that these youth take by associating themselves with you? And I'm curious, who wants to respond to that?
Well, like I said, from the beginning, we've never asked them for anything. So even the guys that have not succeeded or fallen through, they will tell guys on the street, well, what's the catch? What do they want from you? And they'll say, nothing. In fact, when I quit my job, he called me up and asked me why I quit my job, or I went out on the street trying to find the guy, trying to get him back to work. So we've done it enough times that they know it's not about us, it's all about them. And when the word starts spreading like that, everybody just knows we're just out to try and help them and help their families. And we've never asked them for one thing, because if we do, then it taints the whole process that we're asking for something in return. And we don't do that. It's just about them.
And Oscar, what kind of a risk would it take to step away from a gang? What does it take in terms of courage and strength? And what do you bring in terms of support and protection?
Well, definitely it takes determination, and it takes to understand and see what type of consequences one will go, not just for themselves, but as for their family. Because then not only you're putting yourself in danger, but you're putting your family in danger. And so do you want to really continue to go down that path? Whereas I see it all the time, you know, there can be a young guy who's in a gang and he's walking with his mother and little brother, and, you know, he gets approached by another gang, a rival gang, and, you know, they're not going to care that you're with your mom or your little brother, or it could be even a baby you're holding in your hands. They don't care. And so do you really want to put that a risk, you know, for your family or for yourself? So understanding the dynamics that really, you know, gangs is not cool. It's not. But, you know, that's important. It's important that, you know, we are exposed to that. There is a blessing for being exposed to that type of lifestyle, because then your curiosity leads to, you know, I wonder how it is to live a better life. I wonder how it is to go to high school, get my diploma, go to college, such as myself. You know, I just, 2 weeks ago, I just got my degree in criminal justice from City College of San Francisco. So all the negativities and stuff that we hear of City College, but there's great things that's going on at City College of San Francisco. I got my degree. I'm pursuing another degree in Latin studies, and soon to be either going to Berkeley or State. But, you know, as I conclude, I think it's important for all of us, and there are many people out there that can also help out with this, to help our youth.
And I want to turn in the next 2 seconds that are left to offer Kathy to tell us how do people find out more about your program, whether they are a teen or a parent who want to take advantage of the opportunities you have to offer, or an employer who wants to be part of the solution here.
Well, they can call us at Mission Station, or they can contact Supervisor Campos, and one way or another we'll get back to them.
And do you see this spreading to other neighborhoods in the city?
We'd like to do that. We'd like to be, you know, see if other people want to do a cookie-cutter approach. And it's been successful, and we just keep it simple and just keep expanding it. And I think over time, I mean, you could spread this throughout the whole city, try different cities, you know, try it in Oakland, San Jose. And like I said, if they're working and they're sleeping, they can't be out on that corner.
Great. And we're going to have to stop it there. I want to thank our guests. That was Officer John Cathay of the San Francisco Police Department. We heard from Oscar Pena and Mike Bowen here in the studio. And earlier, we were joined by Chris Kondo and Supervisor David Campos. Thanks to all of you for joining me this evening.
Thank you
for having
us.
Appreciate it.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at kalw.org. Our engineer this evening was Eric Jansen. Tonight's show was produced by Wendy Holcomb. Join me next Monday as we discuss food and family with Bay Area food writers. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.